All right. It feels like we just left.
I think we did
Yeah, pretty
days,
much.
days ago.
Yeah, it was a few days. What, today's Wednesday, right? So yeah, it was just what, 3 days ago, roughly. All right. Well, let's jump right in and we'll just sort of hit the ground running. I went through last minute and looked for any sort of interesting AWS news or interesting blog posts, and I came up empty. I don't know if you managed to find anything. I think we're still in like the post reInvent January. Bleh.
Yeah, I guess there's nothing interesting that came out since Sunday, essentially, right?
Yeah, I was kind of hoping
I've
they'd
seen.
throw something in there, but I couldn't find anything that that I was really interested in talking about. So yeah, the AWS News blog post segment is short and sweet this week, so let's move on. The next thing is there were a bunch of links, and I kind of organized them, Gen AI and stuff like that. And there was the one that you shared about Cloudflare and Code Orange, and when I read that, I didn't really think it would be a Gen AI topic, so I just threw it in a new segment that we've never had before, general. So why don't we start with that one? Yeah, why don't you kick us off?
Sure. Yeah, so this is kind of a general cloud security item, but Cloudflare's made some improvements to their architecture in terms of how often things will fail or what the scope of failures are. So the gist of the blog post is that they are essentially scoping down the failure area. So everyone, I'm sure, remembers the Cloudflare outages that happened in the back end of last year, right? So we had multiple outages. Multiple cloud providers had large outages, actually, now that I think about it. But this is their remediation attempt.
Yeah,
So.
I kind of chuckled. It's one step below OpenAI's Code Red.
Yeah.
It's not quite that bad, but it's close. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of when I read through this, I was like, the gist of it is, yeah, we messed up a couple times, and you can still trust us. We're gonna be better. You
We
can't really,
promise. Yep.
yeah, you can't really say much, you know. What's the thing you see every once in a while on the social media? Hug ops when stuff just goes sideways. You know, shit happens, and it's good that they're kind of addressing it. And I thought one of the things in the article that stood at me is like, they don't pull any punches isn't the right word, but they tell you exactly what went wrong.
Yeah.
And they sort of call themselves out in the sense of like, hey, listen, this is just more complicated than it needs to be is the kind of way I took it. And we're gonna make it easier for us to manage these things so that there's less likelihood of shit going sideways.
Yeah. And you know what? That's great. That's what I wanted to see, right? Like with this kind of provider, if you can make it as transparent as possible and tell me exactly what happened and how you fixed it, that's inspires a lot of confidence in the platform. So that's
Yeah,
great.
there's a certain amount of self-realization, if you think of it that way. Like, you know something went wrong, and we're going to tell you what went wrong and how we're going to do it better in the future. And I like you said, it builds confidence. I think it builds trust. I don't use Cloudflare myself, but I have customers that do, and I know a few of them suffered, and I'm sure it will be welcome news to them as well, right? All right, perfect. So there's our short, adjusting the audio here a little bit. Our short general news segment. Let's get into the fun stuff. And I don't have these in any particular order. Again, as I was going through, I tried to look for a theme, but I didn't find any. So we're just gonna work through the way it ended up in my note-taking app. So the first one was the news that Google and Apple signed a multi-year Gen AI agreement. It's funny. I found another article today because I went back to the link that I shared with you, and it's literally like a two paragraph thing, right? Like, yeah, we like to work with each other, and we're going to continue to work with each other and make tools, better tools than what you have now. It's kind of what it said. And then I found a good article on The Verge, which I thought, you know, didn't really say anything different, but they had, I think, a little more commentary. So in a nutshell, Google or Apple is going to use the Gemini, there you go, AI as part of both the Apple Intelligence solution. And they're also, I took it from the article that they're going to release like an updated version of Siri, also based on Gemini AI. I don't really think you could say anything bad about either of those things, right?
Don't. I think it just shows that Apple is maybe admitting that there is something here and they don't have the ability or the desire to do it in-house, right? Yeah. I mean, it just costs so much to train these things and create these frontier models. So I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. The other thing that I took away, it wasn't in the news release, but it was in the Verge article. And, you know, was the fact that the author there said privacy is a big part of this too. So one of the things, and I don't know if, you know, it didn't say this in the press release, and I didn't dig really hard looking for other sources, but it did say that part of the deal is going to allow Apple to run Gemini instances on Apple hardware inside Apple managed data centers. And that was a big part of it because, you know, Apple has over the years talked about how privacy is important to them and blah, blah, blah. So I guess that was another big takeaway that I noted from the Verge article, which I think again makes sense.
Yeah, that makes total sense for Apple. They're super obsessed about that kind of secure hosting.
Yeah. The only other thing that made me chuckle a little bit when I saw this was the fact that I'm like 95% sure that, I don't know, at least 6 months ago now, Amazon signed a deal with Anthropic to come out with the next generation of Alexa devices. I just have to be careful. There's one on my desk.
Don't wake it up.
And I still haven't seen it. I don't know. Like there was the new, sort of the same thing. It was a news release going to be powered by Claude, right? Going to make these devices fantastic and coming soon. And maybe they're still beta testing it. I don't know. Maybe it's sort of released to a small subset, but I guess I'll believe it when I see it kind of thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, right? Like you'd want to, that feels like it would improve the power of those devices. I wonder if they're still selling or if people actually want Alexa still. Maybe that's...
Yeah, I don't know. I have them all over and like I can tell you, we joke about it quite often that we think they're much dumber than they used to be. Like I have to sort of use the keyword multiple times to get sort of it to acknowledge that I'm asking a question, stuff like that. And I think it most of these devices fell into the same thing people do. Play Spotify, tell me the weather, tell me the, you know, what are my notifications kind of thing. And outside of that, people really don't do a whole lot with them, it seems. So it'll be interesting, you know, Apple with Siri, you know, I would assume if Google Home still exists, I don't even know. You know, you'd think it would be Gemini powered, and then you've got the Echo devices, right?
That's the thing, right? I feel like, I wonder if those services just eat the Home Assistant market, right? Like, do those just go away when you have a model access on your phone that can make web searches, API calls? Like,
I guess it depends on the level of your nerdiness.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? Like I have Home Assistant here. I've got it tied to my Echoes. So when you open doors and stuff, the Echoes tell you the doors are open and stuff. I don't see for me it going away. I like to tinker with it. But yeah, if you're not a technical person, then if you've just got the ability to have a voice device, whether it's on your phone or a standalone device that's actually intelligent with some of these models built into it,
yeah,
it does what you want, right?
At that point, you would want the experience where you buy the thing and you can press a button or make the voice call out and do the thing. Yeah. I did find an Alexa Plus page on the Anthropic website, so.
Yeah?
Maybe, yeah, like. It says coming soon.
Coming soon. It's like a movie release. They're like, buy your tickets now. Release is fall of 2027. They're like, I think I'll save my bucks until you actually release this movie.
Yeah, everybody will wait on that one.
Yeah, and I heard I know we're off topic now, but I've always been a fan of voice. I also heard that if you were a Prime subscriber, mm-hmm. you got this new, what do they call it? Echo Plus or whatever. I'm going to use Echo because it's my keyword, right?
Alexa Plus.
That it's included. And then otherwise you could pay to kind of upgrade your device to use the new model and stuff. So I don't know. That'd be interesting. I think the Google and Apple thing just makes a lot of sense to your earlier point. And if it makes these voice services better, I'm all for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks like Alexa Plus is early access.
Early access. Right now. Yeah. 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 Maybe they'll listen to this and we'll, I doubt it, but you never know, right? Okay. What's next on my list? Anthropic releases Cowork. Why don't you walk us through this one?
Okay, sure. I mean, this kind of ties into the discussion we had last week about the Jeff CEO app. And it's kind of, this is really interesting. It is essentially Claude Code, but designed for the desktop, right? Mm-hmm. So this is a desktop agenting tool that you can run that leverages Anthropic's models and whatnot. And then you can have it go and manipulate files, just like kind of you would do with Claude Code, except that it's using a GUI. So this kind of feels like to me it's Anthropic trying to go into the, and they pretty much said as much, but they're trying to get into the rest of knowledge work, what they're doing to software engineering. That's what the guy said on the announcement.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Yeah, I made a few notes, right? Like just this idea of extending that existing Claude desktop solution, right? Into your file system. I know you can do it now, but like I can have it look for things and, same sort of idea. I have to say, yes, it's okay. Go ahead and do that. But I guess the other thing that I kind of took away from this, and, you know, I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong here, the current cloud or Claude desktop doesn't have the ability to use things like subagents where it can farm work out, work in parallel on more complex tasks. So that's an interesting feature. And they also mentioned in there that it'll operate independently, right? But if it's unsure or you can step in as the human in the loop and say, hey, you know what? Yeah, go ahead and do this or try this in a different way. So that's pretty good. And you know, it's interesting, just earlier this week, I found a YouTube video came up in my feed and it was talking about, I think I might have this somewhere else in my notes too. It was talking about this idea of a second brain, right? And I don't know if you've heard that term before, right? There's been lots of books written about it and stuff. And this guy's take on it was just that basically for the majority of people, second brain systems don't work in the long run because it always takes a lot of effort from the person to categorize. It's maintenance, right? And the other thing that kind of grabbed me about this, there was a demo video there and stuff where they said to the Claude co-work, hey, you know, organize my files, organize this. And that was one of his main points, was that a lot of these systems, second brain systems, fail because humans aren't good at organizing things. We like to think we are. And obviously certain people are really good at that, but the majority of people will lose interest very quickly or get bogged down in the details of trying to, is this the finance category or is it X category? Where the hell do I put it? So I kind of thought that was interesting too. Whereas if it's running locally, you can task it with some stuff that it'll be way better doing than a human would do. And it's going to have a better attention span too, because that's my problem with organization. I have great plans, and then I'm like, ooh, squirrel, and I wander away and do something else, and that's the end of my organization, right?
Totally. I it's so funny that you mentioned that because so as soon as the state of these models dropped at the end of last year, I'd always tried to maintain a second brain system, like using the Paris system, which is like project areas, resources, and then an archive section, right? And that's kind of like the general format for how you categorize these things and maintain your information infrastructure. But after we got anti-gravity, which is what I've been using for this, I've essentially got it so that there's all these agentic workflows in my second brain that I can call on to go and like, hey, I have this thing I want you to go research for me. Web search was huge for this too. But I've essentially got my whole, I'm starting to organize my whole digital life into that system. And since I've done that, I've been like 10 times more productive probably than I've been in the last 3 years on my own personal stuff. Like I've worked on maybe like 20 or started like 20 different projects in this system. And like a project is just like an item of work or whatever, right? Like for example, there's this podcast that we talk about. We want to talk about these things, for example. But like for that, I've built like a workflow to go and scrape what it's the news for these topics, that kind of thing, import them for me to review for interesting topics. So just stuff like that, right? Like this is kind of a, it makes a lot of sense to have this kind of assistant almost workflow for these tools.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I love that because I've read a lot about second brain concepts. Not this holiday season, but last holiday season, like I went down the YouTube rabbit hole on note taking.
Yeah.
I use Obsidian.
Yeah, you're like, huge Obsidian.
But the challenge is, I think it's kind of like going to the gym. You have to build the habit of doing it. And most of us struggle with that, myself included. Like I'll kind of, you know, go like for a certain number of weeks really consistently saying, I talked to Travers about X and I've got it, you know, I've got a people record for you. So I'm like, I know I talked to Travers about that. What the hell was that? So I can just search for you in my second brain, right? Mm-hmm. But the problem is that, at least the way I think about it, real life gets in the way. You get bogged down with work, you get bogged down with just non-work things, and your note-taking goes away or gets a little more sporadic. So this idea of like you said, having a second brain that's sort of augmented, if I could use that word, with some agentic tools makes a lot of sense, right? So pretty cool.
It's sprawling into this huge monorepo now, so I have to figure out how I want to sort of like code projects, that kind of thing in there. And there's like a resources category is kind of exploding.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least.
So how do you, I got another question and then we'll move on. And this is because of what this person said in the YouTube video, which I'll see if I can find and I'll share it in the notes when I publish this. Yeah, I can probably go back in my history. Right. And yeah. They said one of the key things is you have a single point for capture.
Yes.
Right. And his suggestion was Slack, because he's like, I'm in Slack all day. I use Slack all day for everything. So it's just there and I can just, you know, build a channel and I talk to that channel and it's sort of his entry point for his second brain. What's your entry point or your data capture?
So for now, I just have it running. It's just files right now, and I'm using the anti-gravity IDE to work.
Okay.
With it. Okay. Or I'm using OpenCode to pull up the root, and then I have a suite of skills that I use in the repo.
Okay.
For example, that I call. What I want to do is I want to get kind of a server going and have that connect to like Signal or Slack would be good too, or Discord or whatever, and then communicate that way. And then I can just do it over mobile, right?
Yeah.
That would be the dream.
Yeah,
there's a couple of projects. Cool. Yeah, there's a couple of projects out there. We'll probably talk about them in a second here, but that do very similar things. And it's kind of funny, Anthropic released this thing, but Google also, I don't know if I threw this in the chat here, but they also released their own personal intelligence thing recently.
Oh, I've got it in my notes. So we'll talk about it later. Yeah, yeah. Currently unavailable. Unless you're, you know, one of the lucky few in the US and you have to have a certain subscription and all that stuff. We'll come back to that. Cause that to me is really exciting again. Like if you're not a certain type of person who wants to tinker all the time, these types of things, like it's your personal second brain. And I know we could talk about privacy concerns and all that kind of good stuff. Yeah. I kind of think that ship has sailed. This is the way our lives are going to be. You know, and I'm going to say one more thing actually before we move on. You remember in what's that? I should know this because I've read the books, I've watched the movie, the series Space Movie.
The Expanse.
Thank you. I could not remember. You know how throughout that show, and I would say even more so in the books, they talk about the feed, right? And it's like a very personalized thing just for you. It's your information. Right. It sounds very similar to what you kind of just described on, hey, this is the type of news I want to go read about. Go find it for me. We're thinking about the same thing because I've been trying to teach myself a little bit about the Strands framework. And that was one of that. The Strands framework is like an open framework, AWS. I don't know if AWS makes it or helps maintain it or something. I'm pretty sure they use it internally. And it's basically a framework to help you build agentic workflows. And I have like a list of project ideas. And I've kind of said, had Claude help me with this and just said, okay, I'm trying to learn about Strands. Give me a high level overview and then give me like 3 to 5 projects. This is the thing that gets really scary. Isn't the right word, right? But I'm like, okay, tell me about the framework. Keep it high level. I'm just learning. Okay. So it gives me a really great description. I read it all. Fantastic. And then I'm like, okay, so in order to learn this, we're gonna have to build some projects. Okay.
Yeah.
So give me 3 to 5 projects, sort of increasing in complexity. I don't want you to write the code. I just want you to point me in a direction and I'll ask you for help. Okay. So it starts spitting out some stuff and I can't remember I could look in my chat history and find them. But one of them was, I'm paraphrasing, but I remember from one of our conversations, you're a big fan of The Expanse. Cause I guess we were talking about this idea of a feed or something. And it's like, you could create agentic workflows or agents to help you build a customized feed. And I'm like, I'm like, oh, cool. I haven't done it, but I've got a list of a small project list, right? Of some things to help me try to learn about this framework.
Well, hey, do you think RSS feeds come back more because of that? I mean,
I use RSS feeds every day. Yeah. In my little home lab, I have, what the hell is it called? It's a Docker container that I run in my home lab. And it's called Fresh RSS. And I just, if I find something I like, I say, does it have a feed? And it's like, yep. And I add it to that. And then I have a little RSS feed. That's
perfect.
Yeah. It does the trick, but I want something a little more intelligent than that. Cause like I have to go and find it. I want something out there looking for me and then saying, you should follow this. So
Projects
that's kind of what for 2026.
Yeah, honestly, that's what I've been doing. It's interesting. You have to kind of build out the tools, right? But once you have the tools, like we talked about a few episodes ago, you kind of build out a library that you can reutilize, right? Yeah. So there's like, I've been doing a whole ton of, if I watched an interesting YouTube video, I'll throw it in and then get the transcript using a tool and then parse that into actionable documents that I can look at. And do I want to add this to my knowledge base and then go from there. So that's kind of another stream you can subscribe to, I guess, in this kind of feed situation.
Yeah.
But you could also have like a, you know, like tell it to go and do a search on this topic every once in a while or set that up on a cron job, that kind of thing. So
yeah, have it go off and just check and see if anything's changed kind of idea. Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
I did make one more note about Cowork is and that you need the max plan to use it.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is what, $100 a month?
It depends. They do a weird pricing model. The base max plan is $100, I believe.
Okay.
But you can increase it, I think is how that works.
I tried to confirm the pricing before we started. And I don't know, the Anthropic site just is weird for me. Sometimes it looks perfectly, other times it doesn't. The pricing page, I almost wonder if it's like my ad blocking with Pi-hole or something. Pi-hole's not liking some of it because the page loads, but it just gets 98% of it's just empty. So I wonder if it's doing something weird. That's could another that. Another episode, I guess.
Yeah. They could be they also have not the best reputation for maintaining their stability, so.
Yeah.
Anthropic.
Interesting. Yeah. What's next in my list? Superhuman, which I'm a fan of. AI exfiltrates emails. Why don't you walk us through this one? I got my head turned around a little bit reading it.
Okay. So this is super interesting and super relevant to the Cowork thing, all of these GUI agents that you're, or anything you're sending emails or going telling to go through your emails, right? Or anything that's browsing the web. So there's a security risk called prompt injection, right? And that is when a nefarious actor inserts text into an LLM's input, and then that input causes it to go and do some bad action, like exfiltrate your credentials or something like that, mm-hmm. right? Though we've heard about all kinds of stories of jailbreaking LLMs. Well, how this works is the bad actor will send you an email, and if you are processing that email, there's an opportunity there for prompt injection, right? Just anywhere now where you can have one of these systems consume text, there is the risk that that text will try and jailbreak and cause a security issue for you. That's kind of the general gist of it.
Yeah.
It's crazy to think about, right?
Crazy stuff. I think the thing that I took away from it was, just crazy. It reminded me of the old SEO days when you would just keyword stuff a website. And you just make it like white on white text. So it's like, it's not there, but the crawler would see it. And then you would rank really well for those keywords. Yeah. Same sort of thing, right? They gave that example in the article. Well worth a read. And I think the other thing that's important is it's already been addressed by, I guess it's Grammarly now, right? Because Grammarly bought Superhuman. So yeah, I think we're going to see more and more of this stuff. It's just... I don't know. It's just going to happen, right? It's, I don't really know what else to say about it. It's 2026. We're going to see a ton of this stuff, I think.
Security is not going anywhere and these systems are fuzzy, right? So there's a lot more room for this kind of exploitation. So we've seen it once, we'll see it again. That's one thing that I'm worried about for 2026 is that we'll see like a really big security event in one of these companies. Because of one of these agentic systems. I have a feeling it's going to happen this year.
Yeah. I wonder if it hasn't already happened and it's just been kept quiet.
Yeah, maybe.
Like when you see stuff like this, it makes you wonder, because we talked about, and I'm not saying that this would happen with Jeff Seo, right? But we were talking about that last week. And like one of the very first things I did when I loaded it up was summarize today's emails for me. Tell me what's important, what isn't. Like that's a very human thing to do, because you just get inundated with emails, and it's fantastic that something can summarize it and say, all right, these are the three most important things. You need to respond to these. These three things over here are more just informational. They can wait. Like there's lots of value there, and it's, it's quite possible that this stuff, it's like the new phishing attacks.
Yeah. If you're phishing an autonomous agent, right?
Don't even have to open the email.
Yeah, there's no risk of like manipulating the user. You just have to manipulate their system, whatever that is.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you scan for this, right? I guess you can try to do, maybe you can pre-filter it with another model. So you look for bad text or you'd have to have some techniques, some regexing techniques, that kind of thing, profiling techniques to look for this. Yeah,
we just go old school and we're like, if you're using an HTML web client and it's white on white text or black on black text, depending, that's a no-no. Can't do that anymore.
That's bad.
That's bad. this email is dangerous, right? The old school stuff that they used to do. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But I don't disagree with you. I think we're going to see some crazy stuff.
Yeah, they'll have to solve sandboxing first. Although I think Cowork is running on a VM. On macOS. I think that's why it's only macOS.
Is that what it's doing? So it's like sort of segmented?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're sandboxing it.
Yeah.
Which
makes a lot of sense, right? Let's see here. What's next? Oh, I think this is an OpenAI article that you shared. Measuring the performance of our models on real world tasks. And the first comment, I'm going to say one thing. Okay. Yeah. And then I'll let you, I'll let you dive in. It's another benchmark.
Yes.
Just what we need. I do have another. We already have 10,000 benchmarks. Here's one more. I do have another couple comments, but I'd like to get your thoughts on it. What do you think on this article?
Yeah, this one came back to mind because I was thinking about, I saw them release Cowork, right? And I was like, So this is targeted clearly at anyone who uses a computer for like regular admin tasks or like, you know, your classic office tasks or your spreadsheet tasks or what have you, right? And they're trying to augment that person. Is it good enough? How good does it need to be for it to make a huge difference, right? And if you look at this paper, what they're saying essentially is that for most tasks, if you augment someone with a agentic system that they can delegate to, you see a productivity improvement versus the person just going to do the thing. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. One thing stuck out at me, and I wrote it down, and I'm pretty sure I didn't paraphrase this. So you can put this in quotes. We found that frontier models can complete, so the new benchmark is called GDPVAL, okay? So frontier models can complete GDPVAL tasks roughly 100 times faster and 100 times cheaper than industry experts, okay? And then it goes on, blah, blah, blah. Oh, but it's important to have human insight. And my comment was, sure. So like, you know, if I thought there was a graph in there too that they showed, and they showed different models on how well those models did compared to a human expert in that task. Mm-hmm. And I think it was actually, was it Opus? Opus something was the best. Yeah, it was like the best model as far as getting as close to a human expert in whatever those tasks were. And I don't think in the article they actually highlighted what the tasks were. They just said there's 44 tasks that we tested it against. And my first thought was, if it does it 100 times faster and 100 times cheaper.
Yeah.
If you're a business, a business is there to make money. So if I can do something 100 times cheaper and it's going to be almost as good, right? And the models are always going to get better. So if it's going to be almost as good as the human, do you actually think that there will be human oversight?
I do.
You do?
I have a reason why.
Okay. What's your reason?
So what you tend to see, so when this came out, not the benchmark, but Cowork, the Claude Code team essentially said that they wrote the entire thing with Claude Opus 4.5, right? Mm-hmm. But after a little more prodding, what they said was Claude Opus wrote the code, but it couldn't do it without searing from the team, right? And I think that's something that you really see with these agentic systems. And it's something that I've noticed a lot in my own work. But it's that these tools are as good as you can delegate to, right? So if you can break down a task really well and you're familiar with a system, you benefit from the clarity that you can give to the task description, right?
Yeah.
Like you can provide a lot of narrowing of like the search space for what actually needs to happen. And then from there, these things are pretty good at, okay, this is actually what you need to do. Let's break it down into to-do steps to go and execute. So maybe for specialized tasks, like coding is a good one, but I mean, I'm sure there's very specialized spreadsheet workflows and things like that you'll want to have someone steering on to point these things in the right direction.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I'm at.
I don't disagree with you. I take a slight different take on it though. Like if I had five humans before, probably don't need five anymore. I need one.
Yeah.
Right. And it goes back to the Cory Doctorow thing we talked about, as we sort of finished up, I think that was 2025, right? Like, and that leftover human is really just the scapegoat when something doesn't go right. And I would also think that there are a fair number of organizations out there that are like, it's good enough. And I don't need a person anymore. So I don't know. I think these kinds of things scare me, like as far as like, you know, when they specifically say in there, these are highly complex tasks that human experts do. And then later in the paper, they're like, we can do this 100 times faster and 100 times cheaper. And then they throw in the human oversight thing. I think a lot of people won't read past the 100 times faster, 100 times cheaper. Be like, sign me up.
Yeah. But they get sandbagged a lot by the fact that they lie constantly, right? Like You know, that, yeah.
Do you mean the vendors or the models? Just for clarity.
Well, both, maybe. I think both probably. But
probably.
I was talking about the models, like the hallucinations.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, fair.
Yeah. Is still a huge issue. And also, we haven't really seen like productivity measures in the economy go crazy, right? Like if they were firing a bunch of people to use these tools and do the same work with less people, you would expect to see that explode.
Yeah.
Is my view. Yeah. I mean, who knows if we're getting valid economic data at this point, but you know,
there's probably other podcasts that you could listen to that would spend an hour just talking about whether those numbers are real anymore or not. I see your point. I think this kind of goes to the superhuman thing and this idea of just, and it's in specific to superhumans, just this idea of injection attacks and stuff like that and trying to, you know, jailbreak your prompts and stuff like that. I think you're going to see some, I think, pretty big shifts in 2026. And this is just, I think, another sort of indication that you can kind of see where this is going.
Yeah, this year is going to be crazy.
I think so. It's going to be crazy, which is pretty incredible to think about, right?
Yeah. No kidding.
The next one, I don't know how to say this. Pulumi? I've never used it. What it is. Yeah. Pulumi, yeah. Cloud updates just got 20% faster.
20 times faster.
Oh, 20 times. Sorry, 20 times faster. So they basically found a way. The summary that I sort of created after reading the article was they found a way to improve maintaining of state when Pulumi is making changes to your infrastructure.
Yeah. So I guess before they had to discover and send the entire state back to the back end or you had to process the entire state to make the changes. Now what you're doing is you're essentially sending a list of changes, right? Like scoped down specific to where the changes occurred in the state, and then it's constructing it on the other end, which makes sense. Like that would be a lot faster. You probably parallelize it really well. So
yeah.
Just an interesting article from Pulumi. I've meant to try them. I've used them before on a couple of work things.
Yep.
But it's kind of interesting. It kind of fits in that same area as Terraform, right? But you can write it in whatever programming language they support. So
You
can write it in TypeScript or Python, I believe.
It's something that's been on my list too. And then every time I want to go do it, I look at it and I'm like, I can just write YAML in CloudFormation. Like I can just do that without it. You know what? I can do it without thinking about it. Right. Whereas, you know, it's not like a programming language, I don't think, for Pulumi, but you have to learn that. And YAML is YAML. You know what I mean? Like I can have my favorite NeoVim open. Beside that, I can have whatever documentation page I need from CloudFormation if I want to go old school, or I can just ask Kiro, use the official documentation. Here's an example of my standards. Go build this for me. And then to your earlier point, I'll verify that it's right. I'm sure you can do the same thing with these other tools, but part of me is just like, do I care? Like,
how many more?
Yeah. Like how many more tools do I need? Like I know one, I'm comfortable with it.
Yeah.
It does what I need it to do. Right. So,
I mean, there's huge value in that, right? Like you don't necessarily need to transition to another tool. There's switching costs always when you do that thing, right? So
it's
working. So.
Yeah. And I think I'd rather spend my brand power on other things. I couldn't tell you what they are because most of it is probably project procrastination, but it's more fun to think about the projects you want to do versus trying to figure out a new language, right? So anyways.
That is fun.
Yeah. I think, you know what? I would categorize that as an example of another quality of life sort of article, right? Like it's just, hey, if you're using these tools, it's faster and that's great. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
And it's something that I love to see this kind of thing because I've noticed like in the past few years, it feels like software is getting worse. I don't know if you've noticed that trend, but like just with Windows, for example, will break randomly. Not that I've been using Windows for any time recently, but I've noticed on, you know, my wife's computer, that kind of thing, hearing issues from friends. So
I don't. The only thing I use Windows for is gaming. That's it.
Yeah.
somebody forced me to install PowerShell, traditional PowerShell scripting, because I had a customer and they're must be PowerShell. And I'm like, oh man, I could write 3/4 of it on my Mac, but there was some module or something that was just not nice on the Mac. And I was like, I can't believe I'm going to mess with my gaming machine with PowerShell. Jeez. I did it, but I wasn't super happy about it. And then when it happened again, I was like, oh, you dumbass, we can just run a workspace.
So yeah, just spin up a hose, Joe.
So think of this. I created a new VPC. I stood up a directory server, and then I fired up a Windows workspace, all because, and you do the math on what that's worth, right? A month.
Right.
Just for the directory service alone, just because I didn't want to muck around with my gamer. And I'm like, no, this makes more sense. You should install all this stuff. Yeah, good times. All right, let's talk about Gemini and the personal intelligence. I'm excited about this. I think this is cool. Like the first thing I did after I read the article, and I didn't read the last line at the bottom that said where it was available, is in true Google fashion, I was just like flipping through my phone going, well, where the hell is this, right? I think it's pretty neat. And I know people will be like, oh, but privacy, because it pulls in your data from different Google sources like Gmail. I read in the article, I may be missing something, Gmail, Google Photos, YouTube, search. Now it's all controlled by you. So when you turn it on, once it's available, it's actually not, the way I understood it from the articles, it's actually not attached to anything. So you have to sort of opt into everything as you go along.
Yes.
Very similar to what we talked about on the co-work thing. You have to have a certain subscription. So you have to have an AI Pro or AI Ultra, and it's only available in the US for now. And again, the other thing I did was like, well, what plan do I have? I don't know. So I went to Google Workspace, tried to figure it out. And I was like, I have no clue. Am I AI Pro? I don't think I'm AI Ultra, but I'm definitely going to keep my eye on this one when they sort of, I would assume they'll just open it up to a larger and larger group of people. When it's available, it's going on my Pixel, and I'm going to try it. I think it's pretty cool.
Totally. Well, this is like exactly what you wanted out of Jeff, basically, right?
Yeah.
Jeff CEO we've talked about.
Yeah. You know what? Like we've often, I don't think we've talked about this in the podcast before, but I think we've talked about this numerous times, is like you can't compete. Like you can't build a cost optimization tool for AWS, because eventually AWS is just going to eat your lunch, right? And all of these little tools, which are great, like and this is just my opinion, the financial viability of these things is, I would say, very, very low, except for a very niche audiences that are like, under no circumstances will I ever let Google, scrape all of these data sources for me. But for a lot of people, kind of like what we were talking about before, if you have an Apple device, you use, what's Apple call it? They have a name for it. Is it just Apple Intelligence?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And if you have a Google device, you now have whatever I just called it, the personal intelligence. Like for the vast majority of people, they're going to turn these things on and they're probably going to find them quite valuable.
Probably. And what the heck, right? Google already has all that data. So
like another point that I wrote down was that I think this is like, to borrow a term I don't like from AWS, this is Google's superpower. Like they already have this giant net, this giant chunk of infrastructure, right? And I know a lot of the other folks do too, but in addition to that, they already know so much about the vast majority of people, right?
Everyone, anyone who acts on the internet, basically, right? And they're the only one who has it all like that, right? Like they're the one who's making chips, who has all that data, who has the inference, who's building these models. Amazon's maybe the closest other one.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah. I would say they're probably close, but I think the one of the biggest differences. I know Amazon makes their own chips, right? Gravitons.
Yeah.
Called Gravitons, right? But how long has been, how long has Google been making chips? Like I would think they're
right
much, much further along just in, just from the amount of time they've been doing it. Cause if I understand this correctly, they've been building those, they called TPUs or something, Tensor, right?
Yep.
They've been building those chips forever now. So
many years, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think, you know, I think they were a little slow out of the gate, but I think they're starting to, like the Gemini models, the new Gemini models. Now you've got this when it comes out. So now you've got something on your phone. It supports, what did it say? Web, Android, and iOS. So you can use it wherever you live, right?
Wherever you're computing. Yeah.
Yeah. Probably a combination of web and then one of the other operating systems, like, you know, like me, I would use web and Android, or somebody uses web and iOS, depending. So yeah, pretty neat. And then the only other thing I wrote down about this one that always gets me with Google is it supports personal Google accounts only, not Workspace.
Classic.
Yes.
So businesses are out of luck.
Yeah, out of luck. Yes. How many times do I go on my phone, fire up Gemini, I'm in the wrong profile, and it's like, so I'm at my work profile, right? And it's like, no, no, no. And then I'm like, oh, for crying out loud, you had to go. Anyways, it's, you know, I've got
classic
Nest,
Google.
I've got Nest devices not supported by my Workspace account, so I have to use my regular Gmail account. I just don't get that stuff, but anyways, it is what it is. So I'll definitely watch that one, because I'll be testing that out on my phone as soon as I can. Pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, pretty cool. Yeah. We mentioned Jeff CEO. Let's talk about ClaudeBot. Go for it.
Oh, okay. So this is kind of in the same vein. There's a theme today. It's all of these agentic tools for managing your work and your information life, right? But this is like this is an open source tool that, I can't remember his name now. We'll pull it up in a second. But this guy created this open source tool that runs essentially in a server, in a container system, and then you can interact with it via various channels, right? So you can talk to it via Signal or via various chat channels on the chat apps. And what it is it's running essentially an agentic loop in there, and you can connect it back to Anthropic's AI plans or whatever you have, whatever you're subscribed to. And it's this kind of same kind of thing where you can set up tasks and have this thing go and do specific tasks for you and then persist data, or write code, commit to repos, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
it's on my to-do list. And this was the other link I thought back to the second brain comment that conversation we had already, right? Like this again seems to be very similar to what ClaudeBot is, right? Because like you mentioned, you've got integration with all these different ingestion. You know, so it mentions Slack. It mentions a bunch of different chat programs. You've got, that's your ingestion point. You write your thought. ClaudeBot takes it and does something with it on your behalf. And it kind of made me think of that YouTube video that we mentioned earlier on about building a second brain in 2026. So it's on my to-do list. I've had a lot of fun with Jeff CEO.
Yeah.
But I would say I've had this lingering problem with Kiro, not the CLI, but in the IDE.
Okay.
Where I'll be like, hey, help me with this, blah, 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 right? And it goes off and it does something and it just stops. And I'm like, I give it a minute. I'm like, are you there? And it's like, yeah, I'm here. And I'm like, did you finish that? And it's like, oh, I didn't. I'll go now and do it. And I'm like, why do I have to tell you? Like, you're supposed to be able to do these and just ask me for input as you go. And I did notice, and this, both with Kiro and Jeff CEO, it could be most likely user error, right? I've got it set up in a weird way or whatever, but I did notice with Jeff CEO, I was having the same problem. I originally wired it up to Claude, and then I was like, I wonder if it's Claude, because I know Kiro uses Claude under the hood, right? Anthropic under the hood, it's using Sonnet or something, right? So I tied it to Gemini. I sat down and I figured out how to create a project, get a key for that project, all that stuff, and then wired it up, and it did the same thing. So I don't know. It's odd. So I'm gonna try ClaudeBot as well. I want to see if it does the same thing, because if it happens again in a third situation, it's got to be the user. It's not the tool.
Right.
So it's the only thing that kind of made me think, oh, geez, I'll just go and do this myself. But I think we're going to see, like we mentioned earlier, I think we're going to see a ton of this stuff.
Totally. It feels like a harness problem, right? Like that kind of issue in Kiro, right? Like, and this is one of the things I've found, like I'm using Omai OpenCode on OpenCode, which is essentially a plugin that establishes a loop and a more aggressive task breakdown setup. Mm-hmm. And I found there I'm not seeing it hang at all when I use it. But I have noticed sometimes you can run into a stopping issue, especially when context gets really big. Like when you get to the extreme end of context, the performance tends to break down aggressively, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's just like a sign that if you can split that off into multiple smaller tasks to your sub agents, then that's makes a lot of sense for managing those kind of big contexts. So yeah, give Claude.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a try. And the other thing, just to go back to our conversation about superhuman and stuff, you've got to also think that these things are a vector for all sorts of bad shit, right? Like it reminds me of the old days. You'd be like, here, I have this piece of software, and you're like, I'll try it. And you know, on the old, I'm really aging myself, like BBS days back.
Oh yeah.
Spend a day downloading something, and you're like, well, enter and just hope it works out okay. Like, you know, this seems like a vector that will be troublesome, I think, again.
I wonder if we'll see like a prompt injection attack in an open source library, and then you'd go to download that, and then you load that into context, right?
Yep. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I should just stay gaming and not worry about.
I mean, that's wise. Yeah.
Nothing will go wrong on my Windows machine. I'm sure of it.
Nothing ever goes wrong.
Nothing will bad.
Yeah, perfect operating.
Yeah, exactly. And then the last article we had here was one you shared just before. I'm going to let you run this one because I didn't have a chance to look at it. But it's OpenAI partnering with Cerebus. Cerebus?
Cerebus, I think?
Cerebus?
Cerebus.
Yeah. Isn't that a Greek god or something, probably?
I think so. Maybe.
Yeah. Just made that up. Sounds like a Greek god, right? Like, come on, could be.
Totally. I can't say no with 100% certainty.
Yeah. You must believe me. So walk us through it.
Okay. So OpenAI has this problem where they don't make their own chips, right? They do all the inference, but they're beholden essentially to NVIDIA to have access to the GPUs and the compute to run training loops, run inference loops. Cerebrus is a startup or a company that essentially makes chips that are specifically designed for inference for LLMs. So it's just by some happenstance that GPUs are the best available architecture for training and running these models, right? Like it just so happens that linear algebra runs really well on these parallelized systems instead of like a CPU. So what they're doing is they essentially have these specialized chips, essentially like an ASIC, if you're familiar, for like Bitcoin mining, if you remember. But, you know, specialized hardware for doing the specific task. And on Cerebrus, you can go, they have their own platform and whatnot where you can sign up and run inference, right? But you tend to see like throughput or tokens per second rates that are like in the 1,000 range versus like, nor you might see like 100 on a good day on OpenRouter for some models. Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting to see now if they're partnering with Cerebrus, that means they'll have access to chips to run their inference on.
And we've mentioned Cerebrus earlier. It came up in something else, and it's jogging my memory. I said that I would find a link to a different podcast and I never did. So I've made myself a note. I'll go find that because it was a conversation with, I don't know, was it the founders or not? And they were sort of talking about sort of why they did it and what it's used for and that kind of stuff, like purpose-built chip again. So it's an interesting thing. It'll be interesting to see where that goes.
Yeah, it makes all so much sense for OpenAI, right? Because you're going to spend, I mean, NVIDIA is premium, they're in demand, right? And if you can have that access to that kind of chip, you kind of get a little piece of the advantage that Google and Amazon have with their, you know, in-house hardware.
Yeah. And I asked Kiro, because, you know, Kiro's my friend. Let's see here. It's, I don't know if I spelt it incorrectly or not, but it said, it corrected my spelling first off. Refers to a three-headed dog from Greek mythology that guards the entrance to the underworld, preventing the dead from leaving and the living from entering.
Huh. Maybe not. I don't know. That's like Cerebus, right?
Yeah, maybe it Cerebus. Yeah, it's not spelt the same. It's slightly different. Cerberus is the Greek dog.
Wow.
I was close. One letter off. It still counts, I think.
Yeah, it's Greek-ish.
Yeah, it's Greek-ish. Greek adjacent. All right, man. Well, that's everything we had in our article list for the week. So that's, we're back on our regular schedule. We'll be back, I guess, next Wednesday, 6 to 7 Eastern. We didn't do the movie thing. We got to do the movie thing.
Oh.
I know it's only been a couple days. Have you watched
it?
I actually did, and it took me multiple times to finish it, multiple days.
Okay.
Because that new Leonardo DiCaprio, One Battle at a Time.
Oh, yeah. Was it good?
Yeah.
Was it fine?
I don't know. Yeah. It was fine. Like what I
it took
what
me
I
multiple tries though.
Yeah, well, it's long. Like I don't have the ability to sit and watch that much TV. And you know what? I don't understand what this trend is with movies where like I don't need to have continuous background music.
Yeah.
Like it's on these streaming services already hard enough to hear the dialogue. So I basically turned the volume a fair amount down in the movie theater. I don't think you'd have this problem, right? But on the streaming service, I turned the volume down and turned on closed captioning. That's how I watched that movie. And I think it's like 2.5 hours, 2¾ hours. Like it's a commitment.
Substantial. Yeah.
Yeah. It was an okay movie. I wouldn't tell you not to watch it, but would it be on my regular watch list because it's an absolute fantastic movie? Nah. But it's worth a watch. It won some awards, right? It just won some awards, so
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember what it won. I think one of the actresses, I think
Golden
it won
Globes.
For yeah, Golden Globes, was that what it just was? I think it
I think
won
so,
for
yeah.
Best Musical or something. Never mind.
Okay.
Hold on. I have to look now. I saw like a summary or something and I'm like, that seems weird. I'll never find the category now. See if I can find it really quickly. Best Motion Picture.
Wow.
Musical or comedy? One battle after another. So what is it? Is it a musical or is it a comedy? I don't think it's a comedy, but I could kind of see it being a musical because there's not a moment in that movie where there isn't some background tunes playing. I think that's also why I had to just shut it off and walk away after a while. I'm like,
this is exhausting.
I'm overstimulated at this point. I gotta go. Go do something else. So there's my movie recommendation. It took me 2.5 weeks, I think, to finish it, but
and it was okay.
Nice. I'm glad I didn't pay for it in the movie theater. Let me put it that way.
There has not been much I've wanted to see in theaters lately, unfortunately.
Especially at the cost. What's it cost? You go to the VIP theater here, $20-$30 per person, snacks.
Yeah. You're out $100 by the end of it.
Yeah. I'd be pissed. Leo doesn't need my $100. He's got enough already. Do you have anything that's on your watch list, maybe?
We did watch a good and interesting movie that I didn't talk about. Did I talk about Dangerous Animals last week or last episode?
No, you didn't. Is that the shark thing?
Yes, that's the shark survival horror movie.
Yeah.
And we watched that and I quite enjoyed it. It was good suspense thriller kind of psychological horror movie. So
yeah. I think Karen's watched it, but I'm not 100% sure. Might have been one of those things like late night, just, I'm going to watch this because she enjoys shark movies.
Oh, perfect. It's a shark serial killer movie. So if you like those things, then
there you go.
You will enjoy it.
Perfect.
And awesome. Surfing, I guess.
And surfing?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll ask her if she watched that. I don't know if she did or not. I'll get her review for next week.
Nice.
All right, man. Well, that's another episode in the books, and we'll see everybody back on Wednesday.
Sounds good.
Bye for now.